Well, it's my happy lot to say a few words about Chester G. Chesterton as a journalist. And I'm going to call this paper Old Newspapers. The world itself is an interesting place. Can I be heard okay? Okay. And I want to start with two quotations, both from Chesterton, obviously. The first is this. It's from The Defendant, which was published in 1901, a book of essays. It says, "The merely educated can scarcely ever be brought to believe that this world is itself an interesting place." End of the quote. And the second one is from his autobiography in 1936, in which he said, "And among the many reasons for not being able to be a novelist is the fact that I have always been, and presumably always shall be, a journalist." So being a journalist is a different vocation somehow. Now recently I was talking to a young student after class about newspapers. And he was diligently reading the New York Times. And he wanted to know if I read it daily. And with much embarrassment, I confessed that I did not. Why, he wondered. Well, I replied that no paper, no page in the New York Times is not an editorial page, in my view. Now, I have nothing against editorial pages, of course. They are supposed to be opinions and not news. My objection is not to opinions, but as such, but to opinions disguised as news. Now, in a column in the Illustrated London News written in January 1906, Chesterton began, "Most of us, of course, spend half of our time abusing journalism." Now, he's speaking as a journalist. He says, especially those of us, like myself, who spend the other half of their time writing it. In short, journalists complain about journalism. This column was actually Chesterton's column, was appropriately entitled "Newspaper Snippets and the Truth." Now, Chesterton's view was pretty much mine about the daily reading of the New York Times. What you find there are opinions, not truth. And this is how Chesterton put it. Quote, "The part of journalism that I would feel tempted to suppress would be the serious part. The leading articles and the leading reviews and the authoritative and infallible communications from foreign correspondents. Everyone seems to assume that the unscrupulous part of the newspaper writing will be the frivolous or jocular parts. This is against all ethical experience. Jokes are generally honest. Complete solemnity is almost always dishonest." So Chesterton, as we will see, acknowledges that much humor can be found in the press if we know the snippets wherein to find it. Thus speaking of the then proprietor of the London Times, Chesterton affirmed, "I do not mind in the least getting my jokes from the Marquis Harmsworth. It is only the idea of getting my views from him that seems like carrying a joke too far." We are free to laugh at someone else's jokes. They are honestly funny. But someone else's views we must first judge against a criterion of truth before we dare to make them ours. What is a newspaper for, then? This is Chesterton's considered advice. I earnestly adjure, and this is in capitals, the seeker after truth, if he still survives, to live the earnest and elaborate parts, or to leave the earnest and elaborate parts of the newspaper and join me in poring over the snippy paragraphs. Chesterton capitalized the first letters of Seeker After the Truth. He wonders and hopes, in parentheses, if he still exists, the Seeker After the Truth. He then advises the said Seeker After the Truth to the paper's snippy paragraphs. Is this serious advice, we ask? To illustrate, if not prove, his point, Chesterton tells of reading the following delightful incident recorded in a daily newspaper, a snippet, if there ever was one. A young man was enlisting in the British Army at Portsmouth. As part of the information requested in the forms, he was to indicate his religion. As his religion, with, as Chesterton put it, equal and ceremonial gravity, the young man listed Methuselite. We recall from the Old Testament that the same Methuselah lived some 969 years, said to still hold the human record. But it is not indicated that he founded a religion. Naturally, the army authorities, no doubt unamused, did not find this religion, and as Chesterton put it, citing Bossuet, of all people, it is not designated among the varieties of Protestantism. When the soldier was finally asked what the purpose of this unlisted religion was, he replied, quite frankly, to live as long as he could. Now, clearly, that is a religion that should have been invented, but it is probably unnecessary, as far as we can see, everybody tries to live as long as he can. And Chesterton was quite entranced with this soldier's answer. Considered as an incident in religious history of Europe, Chesterton wrote, the answer of that soldier was worth more than 100 carloads of quarterly and monthly and weekly and daily papers discussing religious problems and religious books. Every day, the daily paper reviews some new philosopher who has some new religion. And there is not in the whole 2,000 words of the whole two columns one word as witty or as wise as the word Methuselite, end of the quote. From this, we learn that Chesterton's columns were probably about in two columns at a limit of 2,000 words. I suppose most of us have had that terrible requirement. Actually, it's a good requirement. You write better, I think, when you have to write more concisely. We also learn that the young soldier, indeed, had an original insight about what we wish in this world and a symbolic way of expressing it. And of these carloads of quarterlies and monthlies and dailies and weeklies, each reviewing the new religions popping up everywhere, Chesterton concludes, a new philosophy generally means the practice of some old vice. Chesterton's journalism is, in fact, often an amusing discovery that the latest fad in philosophy or religion is, in fact, something quite ancient, more likely to be a vice than a virtue. In a column of May 1914 entitled The Ignorance of Newspapers, Chesterton defended a proposition of Bernard Shaw to the effect that the average journalist was in fact 30 or 40 years behind the times. Evidently, many journalists jumped into the fray to prove Shaw did not know what he was talking about. The trouble was, as Chesterton pointed out, that the logic used to prove that Shaw did not know what he was talking about, that, say, the paper is where we get our information, even late information, this turns out to work the other way, or work the other way also. If it is alleged that the newspaper has failed in its avowed function, that is, its news is not news, why then is it obviously no answer? Well, it is no obviously no answer to say that the news would never have come even so late, Shaw said 30 or 40 years, if the newspaper had never had the function that it was that it had neglected, if it never told us the news anyway. But if we cannot get what is new or true from the daily paper, what can we find there? The plain truth is that from official journalism, we cannot get the plain truth. This is Chesterton again. The daily paper is really a rich and suggestive document. Personally, I love reading the day before yesterday's daily paper. Some of the finest fun and wisdom in the world can be found buried in the files of old newspapers. But the daily paper is never daily. The daily paper is never up to date. The reading the day before yesterday's daily paper, for its snippets, for its truth, is what Chesterton is about here. Newspapers contain truths that is, journalists themselves do not often see. Why do they not see them? It is one of the great weaknesses of journalism as a picture of our modern existence, Chesterton wrote in The Ball and the Cross, that it must be a picture made up entirely of exceptions. We encounter a flaring poster that a man has fallen off a scaffolding. We do not announce on a flaring poster that a man has not fallen off of a scaffolding. And yet this latter fact is fundamentally more exciting as indicating that that moving tower of terror and mystery, a man, is still above there, above us on the earth in the scaffolding. That the man has not fallen off of the scaffolding is really more sensational, and it is also some thousand times more common. But journalism cannot reasonably be expected thus to insist upon the permanent miracles. Busy editors cannot be expected to put on their posters, quote, "Mr. Wilkinson is still safe," or "Mr. Jones of Worthing, not dead yet," end of the quote. Chesterton is marvelously amusing. What would a headline shouting that Mr. Wilkinson still alive, what could it mean? It would mean that normalcy is more interesting than oddity. It is more exciting to know that the laws of gravity can safely be defied by scaffolding than by knowing that Smith fell off, allowing the laws of gravity to carry him to his demise. And yet, the headlines draw our attention to what is not working, not to what does work. Notice, too, how Chesterton describes what we are. Man, that moving tower of terror and mystery who is abroad on the earth. Isn't that good? That moving tower of mystery and terror who is still abroad on the earth. Still abroad, that is, if he does not fall off of the scaffolding. a truth that is so common that no one notices its wonder. Chapter 8 of Book 16 of the City of God is entitled The Origin of Recorded Monstrosities, an intriguing title if I ever heard one. In this chapter, Augustine examines the various monster creatures said to have existed in one way or another in ancient times. Among such beasts is the famous dog-headed man mentioned in Herodotus. Of this canine gentleman, Augustine wrote, quote, "What am I to say of the cynocephali, whose dog head and actual barking prove them to be animals rather than men? Now, we are not bound to believe in the existence of all the types of men described that are thus described. But no faithful Christian should doubt that anyone who is born anywhere is a man, that is, a rational and normal and mortal being. And he derives from that first created human being in the beginning. However, it is clear what constitutes the persistent norm of nature in the majority and what, by its very rarity, constitutes a marvel," the end of the quote. Why, we might wonder, in considering Chesterton on journalism, do I cite a passage from Augustine about a dog-headed man who, if he is a man, which Augustine doubted, necessarily derives from Adam and Eve? It is because I want to consider an essay of Chesterton from one of his earliest books, again, The Defendant. It's a great book, by the way. This essay is entitled Defense of Useful Information. This is, again, an essay about journalism, about what we can find in the newspapers, even when we should be cautioned to believe their news. The normal man, Chesterton thought, sees the world as a work of art. By contrast, to recall the passage I cited in the beginning, the merely educated can scarcely ever be brought to believe that this world is itself an interesting place. Isn't that a great idea, that the world itself is an interesting place? Evidently, there is a problem about being merely educated. Good phrase also, isn't it? God save us from being merely educated. All right. We can become, through our education, so disadvantaged that we do not see what is there in front of our eyes. Chesterton was sure that the world was quite an amusing and fascinating place. Normal folks, however, uneducated though they may be, have, he thought, a taste for news. What does this taste mean? It means that there is a pleasure of hearing the mere fact that a man has died at the age of 110 in South Wales, or that the horses ran away at a funeral in San Francisco. Large masses of the early faith and politics of the world, numbers of the miracles and heroic anecdotes, are based primarily upon this love of something that has just happened, this divine intuition of gossip. When Christianity was named the Good News, it spread rapidly, not only because it was good, but also because it was news, end of the quote. Now, news obviously means what is truly new. Indeed, one of the essential mysteries of the world is that something new can happen in it. We do not merely repeat what went before, never forgetting that what went before really happened. A description of it, therefore. And we can find what happened before in old newspapers, among other places. Now, Chesterton, to illustrate this point, next addresses the question about what the average navy, that is N-A-V-V-Y, a word that does not mean a sailor, but a construction worker on the canal, or an unskilled worker, whom we meet on a train, what is he interested in? His interest, we soon discover, is not in those struggles of Parliament and trade unions, which sometimes are and are always supposed to be for his benefit. No, the Navy is bemused rather in the fact that an unusually large whale has been washed up on the coast of the Orkney Islands, or that some leading millionaire like Mr. Harmsworth is reported to have broken 100 pipes a year, that is, smoking pipe. Is the fact that he is interested in such apparently frivolous things a bad thing? The average man still keeps something of that feeling which should be the birthright of man, the feeling that this planet is like a house into which we have just moved our baggage. Any detail of it has value. Elsewhere, Chesterton has made the same point about children, fascinated at seeing the world for the first time. So remember, he says that the little child, he says he's more interested in the box that the toy came in than the toy. Why? Because he'd never seen the box either. So, you know, he sees them both for the first time, as it were. And so for Chesterton, this characteristic of the average man explains the real importance of the newspaper and why I cited Augustine on the dog-headed man. Quote, those parts of the newspaper which announce the giant gooseberry or the raining of frogs, are really the modern representatives of the popular tendency which produced the hydra and the werewolf and the dog-headed man. Chesterton did not deny that such interests could be trivial. And yet, papers get their readers from such accounts. Interestingly enough, Chesterton, who wrote well on science and on its aberrations, adds, perhaps the taste of shreds and patches of journalism, journalistic science and history, is not, as is continually supposed or asserted, the vulgar and the senile curiosity of a people that has grown old, but simply the babyish and indiscriminate curiosity of a people still young enough and still entering history for the first time. Chesterton has a hold on something rather momentous here. When we find these apparently exaggerated or amusing stories in magazines or papers, we realize that they are the same stuff of which our kind speaks in taverns, as Chesterton says, in pubs. Science itself is only the exaggeration and specialization of this thirst for useless fat, which is the mark of the youth of man. It is this link between the interest in common and amusing things and the nature of science that concerned Chesterton even in 1901. The rebuilding of this bridge between science and human nature, Chesterton actually was very good on this. Sometimes you might take a look at the book of Father Yockey on Chesterton and modern science. But anyway, he says the building of this bridge between science and human nature is one of the greatest needs of mankind. That's 1901. We have all to show that before we go on to any visions or creations, we can be contented with a planet of miracles, the planet in which these miraculous things take place before our very eyes. No wonder Chesterton preferred to be a journalist rather than a novelist. There were some miracles in the everyday life of man on this planet, if we would just notice them, that ever are more interesting than ever concocted by the scientists or the novelists. It was this news that was really new that Chesterton found in three-day-old newspapers reporting what the Navy was interested in, that the Navy was interested in the large whale washed on the shores of the Orkneys, or the religion of the soldier in Portsmouth who affirmed that he was a Methuselahite, a man who, like the rest of us, wanted to live as long as possible. In the end, the world itself is, as Chesterton put it, an interesting place. Few journalists saw this truth better than Chesterton in the newspaper snippets that told the truth. Thank you.